You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Romell. I'll be your host for the show. With the preseason underway and the regular season set to start in less than 10 days, single digits, people, that means you have questions and the mailbag is open. I just want to thank everyone who has been listening to the show over the last week, who has submitted questions or comments. The support has been amazing this past week, and I really do appreciate it, and I'm so looking forward to this season and having all of you be a part of it. So let's get to our first question that comes from Andy Seinfeldberg. I really like the Winslow, Hero, Butler, DJ, Bam lineup. That's Justice Winslow, Tyler Hero, Jimmy Butler, Derek Jones Jr., and Bam Adebayo. We saw some of that action in the first preseason game against the San Antonio Spurs. And Andy Seinfeldberg writes, I think it should be our closing lineup unless they go really big. So we haven't had much of a sample size here. I don't think the NBA.com stat sites is keeping any kind of statistics regarding preseason games. So there isn't much to parse from the lineup that we've seen. Again, in a very, very small sample size, Jimmy did not play in Game 2, neither did Justice, so there's not enough there. Tyler kind of struggled against the Charlotte Hornets the second game of the preseason, so we haven't really seen enough, I think, to make this kind of determination. But I understand what Andy's kind of hinting at here, and that's that this lineup has some potential. And if you look at it, at the center position, obviously Bam Adebayo would be the best option in waning moments of a game. He's versatile enough where he can defend any number of positions. He's also athletic enough where he can get to the rim. If there's a rebound and a missed shot, he can pull it down and either kick it out to somebody or drive to the rim and pull it up in late game situations. So this is a very, very good lineup in that perspective. Obviously, you know what you're getting out of Justice Winslow. You know where you're getting out of Jimmy Butler. Playmaking ability, consistent defense, versatility in that regard. I think they're both capable of getting their shot off, although I would say Butler can do that a little bit more effectively than Justice can at this point, although we saw some moments from him against San Antonio where he definitely looked a little bit more aggressive. He struggled a little bit to get that shot to fall, but I think he was also trying to do a lot more. But there's still a comfort level there, one that I don't think we saw last year and certainly not the year before that. And I think we're starting to see growth, incremental growth in Justice's game, especially offensively. And if that's the case, he absolutely has earned the right to be there in the closing lineup. My question is about Tyler Hero and Derek Jones Jr. I think from Andy's perspective, Tyler Hero, from what we saw from him in Game 1 and even to some extent in Game 2 of the preseason, his willingness and ability to get a shot off. I mean, he was picking his spots. His step back obviously is something that to this point can't be stopped if he's knocking it down regularly. I don't know that there is a response for it. I mean, from a defensive standpoint, we've seen James Harden be able to get that shot off pretty effectively. That's not to compare Tyler Hero to James Harden, obviously, but the step back is very effective. He's got that dribble down. He knows how to gather. He knows how to take that step. And what looks like, or what would have historically looked like a travel, being able to get that shot off, and he seems very comfortable with it. It seems we've never seen that from the Miami Heat. I can't recall any player, even Dwayne at his peak, would have initiated any kind of a pull-up jumper with a crossover, maybe a fake, and maybe knock somebody down with an off arm there and then kind of clear that space in order to release the jumper. This is a little different. There's no hands-on contact from the ball handler, Tyler, at this point. He's basically just fooling the defender, going one way, then pulling it back, taking that extra step, and letting it fly. And in Game 1 against San Antonio, that shot was falling. So I think, to Andy's point, you want somebody who can get that shot off and who is a comfortable shooter from the perimeter. And so Tyler Hero certainly seems like a good option. Derek Jones Jr., I think the point here is mostly about defense. He's going to be able to provide a long body who can guard on inbound passes, who can pull down rebounds, who can, like Bam, pull down an offensive rebound and finish at the rim. Those are things that Derek does very well. He's not a shot creator for himself or others. I don't know if that's necessarily something you'd need out of him, though, considering the kind of versatility you have surrounding him. I mean, the other four players, if we move with Andy's suggestion here, all have playmaking abilities. So Derek Jones could just be, you know, somebody who attacks the rim, who can pull down rebounds, who can provide long limb defense. I like it. I like the lineup. There is a problem, though, and part of that problem is the players on the bench. And I don't know that you can go to Deion Waiters, if he's still on this roster, and you can look him in the eye and tell him, sorry, Deion, we're going with a 19-year-old rookie from Kentucky. Actually, Wisconsin. We're going with Derek Jones Jr., who has only shown some limited offensive capability here, and we're not going to go with you. We're not going to go with Goran Dragic either, the 33-year-old all-star, you know, who's proven to be able to hit shots in clutch situations, who's been, you know, a solid playmaker, if nothing else, that we're going to go with somebody much younger. And I don't see that happening. I don't think Eric Spoelstra, for better or for worse, is capable of looking those veterans in the eye and telling them they're not good enough. Especially when he's talked about them so optimistically at Media Day and since then. The way he spoke about Deion and Goran, they're still viable parts of this team. They're still capable parts of this team. There are high expectations there. I don't know. This is a tough one. This is a challenge for Eric, because he really does have to make that kind of determination as to whether or not he'll go with somebody younger. If I had to look at either Tyler Hero or Deion Waiters or Goran Dragic being in that closing lineup, it's hard not to go with Tyler Hero because of his range. I think it's greater than the other two players. Although, again, we're talking about something where it's hard not to get caught up in the whole Tyler Hero situation, because we saw some really great moments from him against San Antonio. There are high expectations there. He's clearly a good shooter. But I do also want to kind of temper those expectations a little bit. He is a rookie. He isn't on the scouting report. Eventually, you guys are going to notice this capability from him, this range that he might have. They're going to play up on him a little bit more. They're going to be a little bit more physical with him. And he's going to have to make adjustments. That's not to say he can't do it. I mean, rookies have shown before. And I think he's capable of shining. It's just his playing time is going to be a little bit more limited. I mean, after that game one, we all wanted him to start. We all thought he was going to be a potential 20-plus per game scorer. And you know, then he struggled against the Charlotte Hornets, which is a very bad team. The shot just wasn't falling. And he needs to be able to make up for it in other ways that shot doesn't fall. So let's pump the brakes a little bit on the Tyler Hero expectations, because he's really good, and I think he's going to be able to make an impact. I'm just not sure if it's going to be as great as we'd all like it to be. So I have no answers here, you know. I like what Andy's suggesting. I see the range. I see the versatility. I see the playmaking. But the question about whether or not Eric Spoelstra is willing to tell his two veterans, Goran and Deion Waiters, that neither of them are good enough to play in these lineups, I don't see that as a reality. So I'd have to say that while I might like this lineup and while Andy might like it, I don't know Eric Spoelstra is going to actually go with it. And that's another question for the roster and for the front office. They're going to have to look at whether or not a trade goes down from either Goran or Deion or both. Because Goran was out the door, you know, in June when they were, or July when they were able to add Jimmy Butler, or when they wanted to add Jimmy Butler to the roster. And Deion, while he may be coming off the bench, I'm not sure exactly, you know, what kind of impact they see him having on this team long term. So it's something to consider. But let's move on to our next question that comes from NorZZA Gaming. He asks about Goran. He says, what do you think about Goran? He's still wearing a large knee brace and he didn't look 100% to me. Yeah, I think this is the future of Goran Dragic, and that's why the questions have to be asked. Goran is, I think if anybody's listened to this show for a long time, they know how strongly I feel about him personally. I love talking to him. He's a really good guy. He is very friendly, open, very good with media. He's won the media award a couple of times. And he's just very personable. And he's also got a fun style of play. You know, he's never been an elite scorer, but he's very, very good at what he does. The iron shoulder, obviously, is something that he's always done at a very high level. But that knee injury, playing in the Euro championship a couple years ago, all these things are starting to kind of take their toll on him. His style of play, his physicality. He explained to me, you know, this was a couple years ago, he explained to me that part of the reason why he has that iron shoulder is because he's just not quick enough to be able to get to the rim, and he needs to be able to create. He doesn't have the elite level athleticism to create that space, and so he needs to kind of throw that shoulder in there in order to do so. And maybe it's just caught up with him. Maybe time has caught up with him to some degree. I think we're going to see a little bit more of a load management situation from him. He's not going to play in every game. I wouldn't expect him to play more than 60 games a season, probably closer to 50, to be 100% honest with you. They're going to take breaks in between. It's going to be a situation where they're going to have to monitor this and see whether or not there's any inflammation or swelling and see what kind of impact he can make. I think we'll see him shoot a lot more from the perimeter in limited minutes. I think you have other ball handlers, you have other shot creators, and so I think Goran's role is going to be one that's reduced. And if that's the case, we're just going to see him in spot minutes where he's going to be, if not a good sixth man, although he did come off the bench as a sixth man against San Antonio, he's going to be a productive bench player. That's his role in the future, and I think going down the road towards the end of his career, I don't know that anybody's going to take a chance at paying for Goran to become a starter, given his injury history and age. And that's an unfortunate part of any player's career as it winds down. He's had a long career. He's accomplished a lot. And he has to make a decision as to what's more important now in this last part of his career, whether or not he wants to go chase a ring somewhere and a contender, whether or not he wants to ask for a trade, whether or not he's happy in Miami. My feeling is that he's happy in Miami. I think he's competitive, but I think he scratched part of that itch by winning the Euro Championship a couple of years ago and leading the team alongside Luka Doncic. So to me, I think he'd be not complacent necessarily. I think he'd be happy ending his career in Miami. Coming up next, is this team deeper than the Big Three? I'll debate next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Manscaped is the number one option in men's below-the-belt grooming. Get 20% off your order and free shipping when you enter the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout. So make sure to visit manscaped.com today. I'll get into the Dion Waiters situation in the next segment, but first, at Steve00Costa, Steve from Cali, writes, is this team the deepest by depth? Well, I don't know any other way they'd be deeper, but deepest we've had since the Big Three or Shaq days? And he used the hashtag AskLOHeat. So we appreciate Steve's question. You know, that is, I kind of wanted to give this one its own section here because the reality is that is a can of worms there. And I was intrigued by it because it does, you know, take us down memory lane there and gives us an opportunity to kind of look at this roster and how it stacks up against other historically great Miami Heat teams. So I'm pulling up the rosters here from those teams. And the 2005-2006 team, the Shaq era team, that's the way I define it mostly. Obviously, they won the championship that year. Shaq maybe a step slower. And Dwayne certainly emerging as a superstar Hall of Fame player. But they had Alonzo Mourning back in that roster. They had Gary Payton. They had James Posey. So those are the kind of talents that they had there. They had, again, UD as a starter, complimentary player, Jason Capono kind of playing some spot minutes as a three-point shooter, Posey being a very, very good 3-and-D player, Jason Williams, of course. How can you forget Jason Williams? I know my former co-host Wes Goldberg would never forgive me if I didn't mention him. They had Antoine Walker, obviously, who was somewhere in between, you know, kind of ahead of his time. He probably would have played a little bit more of the center position in today's game, to be honest with you. But he was kind of stuck in between the both forward spots as a ball-handling big who can space the floor. And so this is a very good roster here. But they also had guys like Dorrell Wright, who was no longer really making an impact at that point. Derek Anderson, Shannon Anderson, Michael Doliak. I mean, even guys like Capono, Wayne Simmion, the rookie that never really panned out, they were not particularly good. But I'd still say they had more top level talent than this current version of the Heat. And again, you look at Posey, you look at Antoine Walker, you look at Gary Payton coming off the bench. Payton obviously no longer the player he once was, capable of producing in some minutes. And to me, I think this team's probably deeper than this current team. And I think what makes it stand out is something I'll get into a little bit later. But let's look at the 2012-2013 Heat roster. As Steve writes in about the Big Three era, this is, to me, a very, very, very deep team. Ray Allen, Chris Birdman Anderson in his first year with the team, Joel Anthony, still a starter at center. I mean, I think actually, maybe by this point, he was already coming off the bench, backing up Chris Bosh, who was the likely starter. And so you had a rotation of the Warden, Chris Bosh, the Birdman, everything kind of playing together there. You had Mario Chalmers. You had Norris Cole, who had already won a championship in his rookie season the year before. You had Udonis Haslem, who was more of a supportive bench player at this point, but you also had Juwan Howard, who got some spot minutes. James Jones being able to knock down the three ball in his limited playing time. Rashard Lewis, Mike Miller, not to mention Dwayne Wade and LeBron James. You had three of the best players in the league at any one point in time, and then you had so many different options coming off the bench as role players. You had Mario Chalmers, who's arguably a very, very good point guard, filling a specific role alongside top-tier talent, like the big three. You had whoever was manning the center position before Chris took it over full-time. You know, Shane Battier was this Swiss Army knife of a defender, a savvy, smart veteran who could do so much. You had Juwan Howard, Rashard Lewis. I mean, we forget about what his talent, the fact that he could space the floor as much as he could. And, I mean, I haven't even gotten into Ray Allen, who saves this season by knocking down the big shot in Game 6 in the NBA Finals, obviously. So it's hard to make a case against this team. Mike Miller, obviously a superstar in his own right. Well, maybe not a superstar, but a star in his own right and a very capable player at this point in his career. Still enjoyed a number of seasons after being traded away from Miami. So that was a very good team. I don't know that you can make a case against it, but let's look at the roster we've got now. We've got Justice Winslow, Goran Dragic, Myers Leonard, Bam Adebayo. James Johnson presumably will make his return to the team. Deion Waiters, Kelly Olynyk, Jimmy Butler, Udonis. Tyler Hero, maybe Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn, as far as rotational players are concerned. It's kind of hard to make a case for this one, and I think this is my overall point regarding this question from Steve, is that depth is one thing, but part of what makes a team appear to be deeper than anything else is the fact that they have top-tier talent to begin with and that everybody else understands a role. Otherwise, you have what we've had over the last couple of years, which is perhaps a deep team, but one that wasn't very good. And I think that's not necessarily the case this season, but it's not that different. And it's not necessarily enough to compare with a team that features Hall of Famers like Gary Payton, Shaquille O'Neal, and Dwayne Wade, or that features, LeBron James, Chris Bosh, Ray Allen, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, those teams were stacked with talent. And again, top-tier talent, and then everybody else kind of understanding those roles. And that's the challenge of team building. That's what makes it so much fun. That's what you're looking at when you're looking at depth. I mean, we wouldn't be talking about Sean Livingston if not for the fact that he was playing alongside Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. And even a guy like Andre Iguodala, I saw a very smart tweet. You know, you don't normally go to Twitter for smart analysis, but this was more of an intelligent observation, and that somebody we're all familiar with, Josh Richardson, is probably going to thrive in Philadelphia because they were asking him to do something that Philadelphia had asked Andre Iguodala to do when he was at the start of his career, when he was a very athletic wing player that wasn't really capable of carrying a team. He was playing alongside an older Allen Iverson, along with some other mishmash players there, and Iguodala was supposed to be the next AI to take over this team. But he didn't really have the kind of long-range shooting ability. His dribble wasn't as precise. He was just more of a solid 3-and-D player. Well, I say a solid defensive player who could get to the rim because he had some elite level athleticism. Eventually, the athleticism waned, but he was able to really do some good things. And, you know, he was traded to Denver. He wasn't able to carry that team single-handedly because he's not, per se, a leader. But he goes to Golden State, and all of a sudden, it's unlocked. And part of the reason it's unlocked is because you have Hall of Fame, incredible talents, and Steph Curry, who might be the best player of this era. I think that's certainly open to debate, but the fact that he's changed the game the way he has, that he's unlocked a style of play that nobody had ever seen before, certainly gives him some consideration. And that's not to say that he's better overall than LeBron James or anything like that. And I know some older fans will probably say, well, Kobe Bryant is probably better than both of them. I disagree with that wholeheartedly, but that's a whole other podcast. To me, I think, again, Andre Iguodala kind of stands out. And so Josh Richardson to some degree, can be that perfect complementary player. But the reason why he's a perfect complementary player is because they have top-tier talent like Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and even Al Horford to some degree. And in Miami, Josh Richardson was just a fine player. As much as we loved him, as much as we appreciated what he could do, he was a fine, decent player, not necessarily good enough to stand out. And so the team didn't look deep. It just looked kind of mediocre, middling. And so that's what you're looking at when you're talking about quote-unquote deep, Steve. So I would kind of pump the brakes on that a little bit as well. If I had to rank these teams, I'd say the third deepest team is this year's roster with Jimmy and some other good talented players there that fill a nice role. I would say the 2005-2006 roster with Shaq and Dwayne were probably the second deepest. And then I would absolutely put the 2012-2013 roster at the very top as far as depth is concerned, because they not only had some incredible top-tier talent, but they also had seven very, very, very capable role players there. And that was just a fantastic squad. So maybe the deepest team of all time, to be honest with you. One of them, I think it certainly earns some consideration. Coming up next, is it time to escape from Waiters Island? You're listening to Locked on Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked on Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. So Woodmaster 20130 writes, "If Deion doesn't want to come off the bench, Miami should trade him. He's putting himself before the team. Duncan Robinson, Derrick Jones Jr., and Tyler Hero all fit better next to Justice Jimmy Bam anyway, since they don't need the ball." We've also got another question about Deion. This one comes in from Kyle Russell. Kyle writes, "Despite getting in great shape and having a starting role last season, Waiters has been coming off the bench so far. Obviously, he wants to start. What's your read on that? If he's still coming off the bench into the regular season, do you see Waiters grumbling to the media?" So I kind of addressed this a little bit following the post-game podcast versus the Hornets, because Deion had such a strong game, albeit against a very bad Hornets team, but he had a strong showing, and he did talk about this to the media. He's saying that, you know, he understands what's going on. He's just going to continue doing what he needs to do, but obviously he wants to start, as Kyle mentions. And I think the two questions are linked there. You know, I talked in the first segment about Deion's fit alongside that Justice Jimmy Bam trio, and whether or not he'd be another potential player there. He does like having the ball in his hands. He does like having the ability to create the shot for himself. He can also make plays for others. So he can be a complementary player. And look, Deion played with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. I mean, for all the ball hoggery associated with Russell Westbrook, and thank goodness we dodged the bullet on that trade, I think, you know, Deion was able to fit alongside them at some points during his brief stint in Oklahoma City. And I think he can learn to fit in against and next to Justin Jimmy and Bam too. So I don't know that he's necessarily a bad fit there. As I said in the first segment, Tyler's long range shooting and ability to create that shot might be a little bit better from the perimeter than Deion's can. I mean, I think Deion can get his shot off along the perimeter. I think he can get to the rim better than Tyler can. It's a debate. It's certainly a debate worth having, and I'm just not sure where to have it. But as to Kyle's point, is he going to grumble to the media? And I mean, he started that process last year when he came back from his ankle surgery. Remember, he had ankle surgery 2 seasons ago, locked him down for the rest of that season. And then he was slowly coming into playing shape as of last year, you know, at the start of last season, 2018. He was fat and he was out of shape and he was starting to really, really put on that weight. And then he started training with DBC Fitness. He started losing some of that excess weight, started getting into a little bit better conditioning, not enough to meet Heat standards. If he's not at a point to meet Heat standards this season, unless those standards have changed, and I think that they may have, he certainly wasn't at that point last year, but he was still a capable playmaker. He was still able to get to the rim, even as heavy as he was. And I think Spoelstra kind of recognized that. And so I can't recall exactly what game it was. Sometime around I want to say early January, Deion had a strong outing and kind of just looked at the bench and kind of looked up the way Deion does, saying, how can you not play me? So I think Deion certainly believes he can play and he should play. And I don't know. I don't think anybody really understands the Deion Waiters psyche. I'd be 100% honest with you. I don't necessarily want to go too deep into psychoanalysis here or anything like that. But the reality is that only Deion knows if he's capable of accepting a bench role. I think in his mind, he still sees starting as a badge of honor, something to accomplish there, like a validation of his career, that coming off the bench is somehow a knock against it, an insult. And that's not necessarily the case. I mean, you think about a sixth man like Jamal Crawford or Lou Williams, you know, who has won that award a couple of times, same with Jamal. At some point, you kind of just have to understand being a starter isn't the best thing. And maybe focusing more on being a closer or being a guy who comes off the bench and does what Deion can do at a very high level. I mean, he can go in there and provide 15, 16, 17 quick points off the bench. And that's the kind of boost that Miami's offense could use on occasion. And so he has to kind of understand that. You know, I will say to Woodmaster's earlier point there about him putting himself before the team, that's Deion putting himself before the team. Look, everybody puts themselves before the team at some point. You know, we have to start changing the way this looks or this narrative about players because, I mean, you can say that Jimmy put himself before the team in Philadelphia or in Minnesota or in Chicago. And, you know, sometimes players just need to kind of establish themselves. You think about the history of these players, the way that they've been brought up from the time they were kids, you know, children, a single digit age, they were taught to play. They were taught by their coaches, by their AAU coaches, by their parents' friends, by their neighborhoods, in some cases, by their church groups, by whoever kind of helped raise these children, that they were so good that they needed to focus on themselves first and foremost and needed to keep working out on the court above all else in order to get out of whatever situation they needed to or to reach that next level, etc. It's kind of hard to separate that ego. And I don't think Deion's quite there yet. So I don't know that he's necessarily putting himself before the team. I think, you know, it could be a conflict, to Kyle's point. Could it create locker room tension? Yeah. Could it be a full cancerous locker room situation? I don't see that. I think Deion's still enough of a team player where he'll accept a role, if nothing else. I think he'll be pissed. I think he'll be silently kind of brooding about it. But I think when he goes out there, I think for him, and hopefully the people around him will tell him and the coaching staff will tell him, you want to prove yourself, go prove yourself. Go out there on that floor and do what you do and beat everybody else up. Take it out on them. You know, if you're upset, take it out on them. Don't internalize it. Don't let it affect your game. Don't be the worst version of Deion, which is, you know, inconsistent or missing shots at the rim, calling for fouls, etc. No. Go out there and focus on being the best you can, because he does have that ability. And I think that's a challenge. And not a lot of guys make that or reach that challenge. You know, Michael Beasley, for as much as we might love him and appreciate him in South Florida, he was another guy who couldn't quite figure it out. And I think, you know, overseas leagues that maybe don't emphasize that kind of thing as much, those are places where he could thrive. I don't want to see Deion playing in the Chinese Basketball Association or in Australia anytime soon. So hopefully he'll figure it out here in Miami. The Heat host the Hawks on Monday night and are off until Thursday when they travel to Orlando to face the Magic. I'll have recaps of those games later on this week. That's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support. Yeah! Wrap it up, B.